You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
They've done it again. For an astounding fourth straight year, the new Western Conference champion, it's the same as the old one. Yes, that's the Golden State Warriors, who have now won the West, even in this era where the conference is so loaded, top to almost bottom, five consecutive times. So what does that mean for the Rockets, who have come far closer than anyone else in the West to actually beating the Warriors? That's what we're going to be looking at today here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is brought to you by Grip 6, where their goal is to literally make the best belt that's ever been made. Go to grip6.com/lock. That's grip, the number 6, and then L-O-C-K-E, lock, to take advantage of their specials for our listeners. As we chat on this Wednesday, May 22nd, it's a total off day on the NBA calendar. The Eastern Conference Finals are now tied at 2 games apiece between the Bucks and Raptors after Toronto's win on Tuesday night. But there's no game tonight because the Western Conference Finals are already over. Yes, that's because the aforementioned Warriors swept the Blazers even without Kevin Durant playing a single minute. And of course, there are definitely a lot of Rockets angles from that series to get into, both from the perspective of how Houston can build a team to ultimately beat Golden State, and also from the standpoint of how we process what happened in the 4-2 loss back in round two. As it turns out, even without KD, the Warriors are still pretty damn good. And there's also the matter of what this all may tell us about Durant's free agency come July, and in turn what that could mean for the Rockets in the 2019-2020 season to come. Anyway, we'll talk about free agency a little bit later in the podcast. I want to start with the product that we're seeing on the floor in the conference finals and what the impacts and lessons to be learned are for the Rockets from those series. And as I see it, pertaining to the Warriors and the Blazers, there's certainly no moral victory for the Rockets. Let's be clear about that. This is a franchise that's beyond that point. The Rockets, James Harden as the reigning MVP, Chris Paul, a Hall of Famer on a $40 million a year contract. This is a team that's about the here and now. This is a team that went into the season with a stated goal of winning a championship. This is a team that was 1 game away a year ago from defeating the Warriors and virtually winning the championship, because of course they would have rolled through the Cleveland Cavaliers even if they didn't have Chris Paul. This is a team that even this year took 2 games from the Warriors, and even the games they didn't win, they were all there for the taking. None were decided by more than 6 points. There were opportunities, they needed a couple more plays, and they didn't get them. So even though the Warriors have won every single game since playing the Rockets, Houston is not at a point in their franchise cycle where there are moral victories to be had. The standard for the Rockets is not the Portland Trailblazers. The standard for this version of the Rockets, with the investment, with James Harden as one of the greatest players to ever live, in my opinion, at least based on the level of play that we're seeing in the regular season, the standard for this team is winning a championship. There's no silver bullet that's all of a sudden going to make this season any more of a success based on what the Warriors do. Even if they sweep out the rest of the playoffs, they already swept the Western Conference Finals. Let's say they sweep Milwaukee or Toronto in the NBA Finals. I don't think they will, but even if they do, just because the Rockets were the so-called closest loser, no, this franchise is well beyond that, especially with Chris Paul having recently turned 34 years old and James Harden turning 30 later this summer. It's about the here and now. So from that standpoint, the Rockets did fail, and let's not try and sugarcoat that. With that said, there are degrees of failure when it comes to having an understanding of what happened and trying to make the proper changes in the offseason to give you a better shot at success in future seasons. And that's where, to me, it is important to look at exactly what happened beyond just the fact that the Rockets lost the series and they fell short of their goal. No, let's have a more thorough understanding of exactly how this happened, because nuance is important here, especially when we're talking about how drastic the changes need to be in this offseason. Just how solid is Houston's foundation? And to me, that's the, I won't say positive, because we certainly don't want to make it seem like that there's a moral victory there, but I will say that's one thing that I am a bit less apprehensive about now that we have seen the Western Conference Finals and the Warriors win these four games, especially without Kevin Durant. Because the way the second round ended, the final five quarters, including game six, without Kevin Durant, look, I wanted to give the Rockets the benefit of the doubt. I said that the Warriors without KD, they had won a title without him in 2015. Then in 2016, they won 73 games, the most in the history of the NBA. But that's 3-4 years ago. The core four, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, there's a lot more age, there's a lot more tread on the tires. So even though we said that they had, obviously, history without Kevin Durant that they could fall back on, whether they were still capable of doing that in the playoffs, we had not seen that. It was a relative unknown. And so even though certainly it could be that the Warriors were just that damn great, even without KD, at the same time, when we're just talking about five quarters of basketball, it's hard to say. So that's why seeing them not just win, but sweep the Western Conference Finals against a good Portland team that just came off a seven-game series win on the road against the Denver Nuggets in Game 7, that's a quality team. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, they've given a lot of teams fits in the playoffs. And not only did the Warriors win this series, they won it with ease and without Kevin Durant. So that, to me, I won't say that it makes me feel good, but it settles my nerves a little bit. That it wasn't about what the Rockets did wrong as much as it was what the Warriors did right. And of course, the onus is still on the Rockets to get to that level. But in terms of what the formula is to get there, to me, it does indicate that the Rockets, especially coming as close as they did, even saying that it was a six-game series, 4-2, not all of those are created equal. For example, the Clippers in the first round, that was a six-game series, but we all know that was a bit silly and misleading because the Clippers, yeah, they had a lot of heart. Look, the two games they won, the Warriors had a 31-point lead in the second half of game two, and they took their foot off the gas. And then game five, up 3-1 at home, they just did not play on the defensive end of the floor with the commitment that they needed. They gave up over 70 in the first half. They were lethargic. They treated the Clippers like they were above them. And in the games where they really wanted to play hard, game three, game four, game six, the Clippers were just outclassed. That's not what happened in the Rockets-Warriors series. It was competitive all the way through, no game by more than 6 points. That's why, at face value, I don't see anything to panic about if you're the Rockets. Daryl Morey, in his first offseason interview, said that they're just going to keep plugging away. The only kind of nagging thing at the pit of my stomach was the fact that the final five quarters came without Kevin Durant, and that's why I wondered, finishing the season, sure, I wanted to give the Rockets the benefit of the doubt, but until you see the Warriors in that setting succeed against someone else, you have to wonder, is there something about you that's problematic? And that's why I pointed to a few situations like Toronto with Dwayne Casey a year ago, where they were just at this point as a franchise where, on some level, it was about them, and they needed something drastic to change to emotionally shake things up. Well, seeing the Warriors do what they did to the Blazers without Kevin Durant playing a single minute, to me, that confirms that it's about them. They are that good. And that's not meant to have you feeling good if you're a Rockets fan listening to this. They need to get to that level, be it external acquisitions, things they change internally. Everything's on the table. But at this point, I don't see anything that's fundamentally wrong with the Rockets now that we know what the Warriors have done since then. So that has me feeling a bit more at ease as we enter this offseason. And that's why now I feel like I'm on board with Daryl Morey saying they're going to keep plugging away, Tillman Fertitta saying that Mike D'Antoni will be back as head coach. The fact that the Warriors are playing this well without KD, it wasn't the Rockets choking or doing something awful. It was never about you. It was about them. And sometimes there's no shame in losing to a great team. Now, that doesn't mean that the season's a success. No, the Rockets know just how good James Harden is. No one in that building at Toyota Center is going to be content until they can win a title with their MVP. Not saying that you accept losing. But in terms of what to do with the roster, the coaching staff, everything else moving forward, the fact that we are seeing the Warriors, and specifically the version that was out there in the final five quarters in that series, and there was so much emotional reaction because a lot of people, the narrative, wondering if this was the Rockets' opportunity after Kevin Durant left. I don't know. I mean, it was certainly an opportunity. Let's not act like they didn't have a chance. But I also don't think it was some golden opportunity to where the Rockets should have won. No, Golden State deservedly won because they are an all-time elite team. And after watching them sweep the Portland Trailblazers without Durant playing a single minute, to me, that is crystal clear right now. We'll continue our discussion momentarily with another couple of angles from the Western Conference Finals that I think is interesting for Houston. But for now, I want to briefly remind you guys about our awesome sponsors over at Grip 6. Grip 6 is an easy and thoughtful gift for dads, brothers, husbands, uncles, grandpas, and even moms and wives, since they've got both a men's and women's collection. These belts are ultra lightweight with no holes, no flap, and it carries a low profile with the buckle laying flat against the waist, which makes the belt super comfortable as well. Grip 6 is the only belt with no holes, no flap, and no bulk, and they've got a special offer for you at grip6.com/lock. That's grip, the number 6, and then lock, L-O-C-K-E. That's grip6.com/lock. All right, jumping back into the show on this Wednesday, May 22nd. This is Locked on Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We spent the first segment discussing Warriors Blazers, what lessons can be learned, and starting with the relative positive that the Warriors did the same thing and then some to the Blazers that they did to the Rockets. So even without Kevin Durant, the Warriors, it's pretty confirmed now after watching them sweep a quality team in Portland. Yeah, they are that good, even without Kevin Durant. So I think that's a slight positive for the Rockets. Season definitely not a success by any means, but in terms of predictive value, where the franchise goes from here, it's something that at least indicates that I think they're right in not making drastic changes. Mike D'Antoni still in place, and Daryl Morey, as he put it, just plugging away and continuing to believe in the culture and the core of this current group. So I think that's one lesson to be learned from the conference finals. I also think potentially there's some free agency implications, which we'll get to in a few minutes in the third and final segment of Wednesday's show. But here in the second segment, there is one other storyline that I think is really interesting from the Western Conference Finals, and it's the struggles of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum against that Warriors defense. And I'm going to exclude Game 4, which both of those guys played well, but that was a game in which the Warriors, number one, they were without Andre Iguodala, which on top of already not having Durant, that puts them in a pretty compromised state defensively. And beyond that, they were also just at that point without two rotation pieces, very short on depth. They also had a 3-0 lead. So for a lot of reasons, physical and emotional, I don't think the defense was all the way there for the Warriors, and they had to win that game with offense. So I think that's a bit of an outlier, and also games in the playoffs where it's 3-0 are always kind of weird because the team that's up 3-0 doesn't feel a lot of pressure. The team that's down 3-0, quite frankly, there's also not that much pressure for them because even if they win the game, they know their season's probably over. So everyone's kind of going out there and playing loose. When the series was actually in the balance, the first three games, Lillard shot 33% from the field. CJ McCollum shot 37%. There was a point late in game three in which Damian Lillard actually had more turnovers for the series than he did made field goals. And that's not meant, when I say this, to throw shade at Lillard and McCollum. Those are two really good players, and they took a step forward this year after getting swept out of the first round a year ago by the Pelicans of all teams. They won two playoff series, beat the Thunder, who I thought outside of the Rockets and the Warriors were the most intimidating team in the Western Conference this year. They took them out in five games in the first round, and then in round two, second-seeded Nuggets, the Blazers did what's one of the hardest things to do in sports, win a road game seven, especially in the NBA. So I think it was a good run for the Blazers, and it's not about them choking. No, it's about the Warriors defensively being able to just dig down deep and reach another level. And to see not just two players, but two guards have that level of struggle against Golden State, it reminds you of just how special James Harden's round two was. 35 points a game, 7 boards, 6 assists, true shooting percentage of nearly 60. He was incredible on the balance of that series. Now, are there moments late in Game 5, late in Game 6, that you can nitpick at a couple of the turnovers late in Game 6? Yes, I understand that. But again, you can make any player in the history of the NBA look bad if you pull a couple of plays out of context. For example, Steph Curry, with 10 seconds left and a tie game in Game 4, was wide open for a shot that would have given the Warriors the lead and ended up messing up his footwork on a potential step back trying to get behind the three-point arc and traveled. If that had been James Harden and the Rockets had lost the game, we would have never heard the end of it. Instead, no one really cares because the Warriors won the game anyway, and of course they won the game because there's so much surrounding talent that those types of mistakes, they can overcome them. So let's not act like just because James Harden makes a mistake that other players aren't. No, they all make mistakes. It happens. There's no such thing as a perfect game. That's why you have to fall back on the entire game, or when analyzing a series, the series worth of data. You can't just look at one or two possessions and pull them out to fit a narrative. And when you look at the overall numbers for James Harden, 35, 7, and 6, that true shooting percentage of nearly 600, that was a remarkable series for him. As far as what it means for the Rockets moving forward, I don't think that James Harden was a guy that was short on confidence. Just because now the media narrative and the bloggers are starting to turn, and I've seen a lot of national accounts and team-specific not related to the Rockets praising Harden more in hindsight than they did during the series. Because now that we have this context, watching not just the Warriors, but the Warriors without Kevin Durant have this much success against two other elite guards in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, then yeah, it does put Harden's series into a bit more perspective. And in the immediate aftermath, of course, the Rockets lose, everyone's looking for someone to blame. Well, the more distance you get between that series and where you are now, the easier it is to get perspective and to realize that, hey, the Rockets did put up a good fight. Unfortunately, the Warriors are just really, really good. They're historically elite for a reason and probably about to win their fourth title in 5 years. And now they've won five straight Western Conference titles. So as far as what it means, again, I don't think James Harden is lacking for confidence. I think he's a guy who is able to tune out the noise. But at least for those of us in the fan community, I think it's a little bit easier to breathe these days on social media, which is nice. But I also think heading into free agency, the narratives, the perception, I do think this puts the Rockets in a slightly better place. No one's going to say that the season was a success, and everyone's aware that moving forward, their window is not open forever. This supporting cast and the two stars, James Harden, Chris Paul, and then the guys around them other than Clint Capella, it's a relatively aging core. Everyone's aware that the Rockets, they've only got a few opportunities left, so it's not like they're still building. But at the same time, coming off a Game 6 loss without Kevin Durant, there was a scenario after that game where if the Warriors all of a sudden are then thrust into a competitive series with the Blazers and it looks like the Rockets did something wrong, well, yeah, you combine that with the ages of the team, and yeah, you could have had a really negative and nasty narrative about the Rockets heading into free agency. And I don't know how much of a difference this makes, but I don't think it's irrelevant in terms of shaping how players and agents around the league perceive you. At this point, again, it's not like the Rockets are a young team that's on their way up. They are not in the building cycle the way the Blazers are, who gave Terry Stotts a contract extension immediately after being swept. They're not that. Portland is not the standard for the Rockets. With that said, I do think that for the Rockets as a team, and also James Harden individually, what the Warriors have done since, and of course the struggles of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, which play into that, it staves off what could have been a really nasty narrative heading into this summer. I don't think anyone is suddenly all in on the Rockets again as the number one team in the NBA. No, that's the Warriors until further notice, and the concerns about the age of the roster, those are valid. All I'm saying is that for the Rockets as a team, and then for James individually, especially when you look at his just absurd stat line against Golden State in the second round, and the struggles of basically every other star against the Warriors in these playoffs, it does at least provide a little more perspective and balance heading into this summer and in terms of what the Rockets can attract on the market, and for that matter, also in the coaching market, because they're going to be looking for at least one coach with Jeff Bezdelic confirmed to be out. We talked about that on Monday's show. There was definitely a scenario after Game 6. We know what the emotional reactions were in the immediate aftermath. or the Rockets, at least from a PR standpoint, could have been buried. At this point, I think it's calming down. I don't think all of a sudden that people are going to say, wow, the Rockets, that's a great franchise. They're poised to, no matter what, win a championship. No, let's not overreact. They are an Asian group. I understand that. All I'm saying is that at this point, things seem to have settled. And for the Rockets, going into free agency, trying to attract coaches, as far as the draft, they don't have any picks, so they're going to try and hit on undrafted guys the way they did Gary Clark a year ago. I think what's happened since for James individually and for the Rockets as a team, it's at least stabilized what could have been a very turbulent offseason. Let's put it that way. Now, we teased to free agency a few times in that segment, and in a few moments, we'll get into that a little bit more in our third and final segment. But before we get there, I do want to remind you guys that to get this show each and every day, please subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features every single day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Now, as we finish up Wednesday's show, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. We spent the first couple of segments discussing the immediate ramifications of the Western Conference Finals, what the lessons are for the Rockets, what it says the Warriors sweeping the Blazers, about the team that the Rockets lost to 4-2 in round two. And in this third and final segment, I want to spin it a little bit forward to free agency. And the Rockets, of course, they're capped out. They're in luxury tax territory. They'll have the taxpayer mid-level exception at their disposal, but that'll probably keep them in a very budget mode. And I think their first and foremost target is retaining Austin Rivers, who, since he's on a one-year deal, they'd have to use the taxpayer MLE in all likelihood to retain him. So if the Rockets make any splash additions, it would not be via cap space. It would have to be by trade. And of course, we've talked a little bit already about Jimmy Butler as a potential possibility, especially if he opts in. There's going to be more to shake free on that front and others in the weeks ahead, I'm sure. But as far as the Rockets, they're not going to have cap space. So at this point, we sit and wait as far as if any trade possibilities come and or within the Rockets' means to attain with their existing talent pool and the assets that Daryl Morey has at his disposal. As far as teams with cap space and what we know and have confirmed right now, I'm starting with Kevin Durant. To me, that's the key variable for the Rockets. And the good news is, I've said since the Houston series ended, and really since the beginning of the Portland series, I think it's even more true now that we see the Warriors sweep the Blazers without Durant. In my opinion, that makes it all the more likely that KD leaves the Warriors after this season. I've said throughout the playoffs, I think there are a couple of scenarios that make it all the easier for him to leave. First, it's if Golden State loses, and they still could. Milwaukee, Toronto, those are good teams. Second, if they win, what kind of role does he play? Because I've been told a year ago, for example, he gave serious thought to leaving after the 2018 season, but he couldn't walk away after they beat the Rockets, after they won that title. It's hard to walk away from being the finals MVP and being in a parade in downtown Oakland, California, and effectively being the talk of the basketball world. That's a lot to walk away from. So even though there have been rumors about him being unhappy, wanting to reboot his reputation to an extent, because a lot of folks see him as a front runner, those types of things. Again, I'm not believing he's out until he's out. And the easiest way, I think, to get him out the door would be if they lose. But beyond that, if they win but he doesn't play a key role, then it's not quite the same as if he's the savior and it's his team. At that point, if it becomes clear that it's Steph Curry's team, and that's certainly what's happened over the last 5-plus games, then I do think there's an easier path for him to leave and not much blowback, even from the Golden State community, should he do that. So because of the way these playoffs have taken shape, and we should note that it doesn't seem like that he's all that close to returning. In fact, the reports I've seen are that Boogie Cousins with the quad tear is actually closer to returning than KD is, so he might not even be back in the finals, although the Warriors do have over a week off now. Unless KD is Superman in the finals, and even if he returns, I don't know exactly what percent he will be, I think it's pretty obvious that there's a path for him to leave without much blowback. And I do think that's a good thing for the Rockets, because even though the Warriors are at this point winning without KD, it's one thing to win without him in a small sample size in the playoffs, when there are no back-to-backs, when NBA players are accustomed to giving everything they have, look, they can survive without him right now. That doesn't mean that if the Warriors get ready for an 82-game grind of a season next year, that it's going to be the same way. Steph Curry is going to turn 32 years old next year. Look at how much Chris Paul has started to decline starting around that age, and certainly this season, age 33, we talked about it a lot. Andre Iguodala is going to be 36. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, they're both going to be 30. It is an aging core, and the Warriors, it's not like they're going to have cap room if Durant leaves and then sign someone else. No, they're above the salary cap, so they won't have that much means to retain or to replace his production, excuse me. So over the balance of 82 games, the grind, that would take a lot out of them, in my opinion, the Warriors as a team, that right now you're not seeing the effects because all these players, they can turn up for the playoffs and in a small sample size, no back-to-backs, they're able to overcome it. If they have to do an entire season that way, I'm not so sure. So that's why even though they're fine without KD now, I definitely think it gives the Rockets a better shot to start a season if Golden State does not have KD. Keep in mind that even though the Rockets started off 11-14 last year, they only missed out on the number one seed and home court advantage by four games. Over 82 games, do I think Kevin Durant is worth that? Yeah, absolutely. And then some. So I do think that even though the Warriors are succeeding without Kevin Durant now, it is far from a given that it would be the same over the balance of an entire season. He is a huge talent piece, I'd say the most talented in the NBA, and to take him off of that squad going into next year, that definitely does not hurt you, in my opinion. So I'm still bullish on what the Rockets can do on that front if he leaves and potentially be in a better spot next year than they are this year, provided that James Harden stays at his MVP level. Now, the one scenario that I would temper my enthusiasm is one reported by Mark Stein of the New York Times in his weekly newsletter. And Mark said this was late Tuesday that he had heard in the past month that the LA Clippers were an equally dangerous threat to the New York Knicks to lure Durant as a free agent this summer. For most of this season, the speculation has been that if Kevin Durant leaves Golden State, and that seems to have been the thinking amongst most insiders this year, that the Knicks were the frontrunner, that this was a team, a huge market, Durant could be the savior, it could reboot his image, which has always been paramount to him. The Knicks were seen, and hopefully they still are because they're in the Eastern Conference, the team that had the best shot. The Clippers, in my opinion, that's pretty scary. This was a team that already was an 8 seed without Kevin Durant. Now they've got two max slots. Now they would have to give up some parts of their team to fit in two max free agents, but considering the young talent there, they certainly would have a lot of young pieces that are quality and now have some playoff experience no matter what. That's the one team that could actually threaten the Rockets that's outside of Golden State next year, the Clippers with Kevin Durant. So that scenario, I still think that I'd prefer that to Durant staying in Golden State because the Warriors have been in your way so often for the last 5 years that anything to potentially weaken them, that has to be the priority. But the other factor that we shouldn't overlook is the relative strength of the rest of the Western Conference. And one reason why I've been pretty optimistic, in fact, increasingly optimistic as the season has moved along, that the Rockets' window, despite the aging curve being open for a few more years, more than I thought heading into the season, is that there's really no other team in the West that seems ready to step up into that contending tier. The Lakers, the Thunder, despite having great teams on paper, those did not pan out at all. Now, maybe if the Lakers get another co-star alongside LeBron James, that could change, but boy, does that franchise seem to be a train wreck these days. So with the Lakers and Thunder not stepping up into that contending tier, and then the other teams in the 2-5 mix, the Blazers, the Nuggets, the Jazz, those are all nice teams, but I don't see any way, unless Michael Porter Jr. ends up truly being the next Kevin Durant or something crazy, that one of those teams can get from pretty good, the low to mid-50s in win total, to an actual contender. They seem to be capped in the good but not great phase. So that's why I've been bullish on the Rockets, because even though, of course, they have this Golden State problem, there's no one else in the West that seems at all close to passing them. So that buys you time, and hopefully one of these years you get the bounces against Golden State. Some things go your way. The one thing that could change that calculus is the Clippers, if they get Kevin Durant, and especially if they get Kevin Durant and another max free agent, because conceivably they could have two max slots. They are loaded that much in terms of their cap positioning. again, I won't say Durant going to the Clippers is as bad as him staying in Golden State. I think anything that weakens the Warriors at this point, that has to be the top priority. But at the same time, it's nowhere near as good as him leaving for the Eastern Conference and the New York Knicks. So as far as KD's free agency, keep that in mind. The number one goal, get him out of Golden State. I do think things are trending well on that front, at least from what few national reports there have been. But then a secondary goal, if you're getting him out of Golden State, don't have him go to the Clippers. Because that's the one scenario with their young talent, a lot of stability, Jerry West part of the organization now, Doc Rivers, good organization, a lot of young talent, two max slots. That might be the one scenario where a team that's not the Warriors could threaten the Rockets next season if the Rockets are back at their peak level. So that's just one thing to keep an eye on in terms of what this playoff run could mean. Yeah, I do think it's trending well as far as pushing KD out of Golden State. But if it pushes into the Clippers, I guess it's a little bit better, but it's certainly not as good as the scenario of KD going to the New York Knicks. That's, in my opinion, what we should be cheering for. Anyway, on that note, that's where I will end things on this May 22nd, this Wednesday evening episode here at Locked On Rockets. As always, I thank you guys so much for listening. And if you want more content before our next episode, best place to get it, first and foremost, Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose, the show's handle at Locked On Rockets. But beyond Twitter, Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, website LockedOnRockets.com, email address LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, beyond just listening, if you'd be kind enough to leave 5-star reviews and even subscribe to the podcast, that's how you can get episodes even before I post them to my aforementioned Twitter timeline. And you can subscribe to the show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car, you can even listen to our most recent episode that way as well, simply by telling your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. So with those plugs complete, this is where we'll break things on this Wednesday, May 22nd. As always, thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you listening. And please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.